The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Let me tell you what, you deserve a shot at the United States heavyweight.
Let's hear it.
I'm the champion. I ought to know. You know, I've been sizing up guys since I came to WCW. And I think the one guy that stands out the most, the guy that I think has earned the title shot, El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler. You're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy. I don't see any reason.
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler.
He's a great wrestler, but thank goodness sakes, it's 50 pounds.
Who are you to doubt El Dandy? Because this guy's a serious professional.
Well, let's talk about some serious
contenders. How about hypnosis? Let's get thrown.
Psychosis?
Whatever. He's a great wrestler, you know. No need to pack your bags. No need to move. Because no matter
where you go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Rawcast. I'm Samuel Galunga, and with me is the Don of the WrestleCast, Mr. Don DeLaurenti.
Hey, what's going on, Sam? Good to talk to you again.
I know. So,
last week you weren't. Hold on, last week you weren't here to claim your prizes because you won.
I missed one. AJ Styles.
Yeah, but
technically he did get it first. And then he dropped it.
You didn't go 6-for-6. You went 5-for-6, but you weren't here to claim your prize. So Miss Didi Jonet claimed it for you.
Okay. That's fine, I guess. Although, with every other Money in the Bank match, it's always been the first person to touch it, not who lands on their feet with it. But I guess it's whatever, you know, I don't care.
You have to claim it off the hook. Now, once you start fumbling around with it, then yeah, there's some room for interpretation. But
oh, come on, Don. This ain't the NFL. Dad's caught it, and we both know it.
Oh, man, that was not a catch. Replay don't lie.
Uh-huh. Anyway, but you know what I mean. Come on. But anyway, congratulations to Otis, I guess.
He's the man. Money in the Bank.
So I guess if you have any news, you can go ahead and get us started with that.
All right. We'll start with the wrestling news first. Drew Gulak, after putting on a Matt Classic with Daniel Bryan on Friday Night SmackDown, he did not come to terms with WWE on a new deal, so his contract expired, and he is no longer with the company. The first speculation was that he got released, but as the event has been hashed out more, he just was coming to the end of his contract. He wanted to get a little bit more money. WWE was like, nah, player, not right now. It's a pandemic. They couldn't, come to a amicable agreement to meet in the middle. And so his contract expired and he is free to do whatever he wants. Doesn't have to wait 90 days. He can sign with whoever's signing people, which is probably nobody right now. But that's the Drew Gulak situation.
If only this had happened 2 months ago, because people who were wanted raises a few months ago were getting raises. Like, look at the money they threw at Gallows and Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were like, yeah, he asked for a raise, and they were like, LOL, nah.
Yeah, I mean, timing is everything. So
They could have given them a little bit more cheddar cheese, but I guess they didn't want to set the example.
Exactly. It's a pandemic. We got to cut our costs and our losses. We're not getting no money from live gates and, merchandise sales on site.
Well, I've explained to you that, they were actually losing money with live gates. So they actually stand to make quite a bit of money this year. From what I've read, it's been they're going to make about $1 billion this year if they run zero live shows, but just off their merch and off their licensing agreements and their TV contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same.
I'm not the head of the $1 billion corporation, so I can't just go spending that man's money for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand where doing live events would be expenditure, since it's not as popular as it was in 98, 99, 2000.
Yeah, you didn't have crowds popping for those Boricuas.
Taking all that stuff around the country every week, 3 times, 4 times a week.
They don't have Mike Tyson.
To a third of the arena being filled.
All right, so what they do have is axe throwing, and we got a lot of that.
Now, hold on. We still got some more.
He's still got more to go.
Yeah, we have some very unfortunate news. Shad Gaspard, one half of Crime Time, he unfortunately has gone missing on Sunday. He was out with his family enjoying the newly opened Venice Beach out in California due to, you know, complications with the pandemic. Well, the beaches were open and they were just having a family day, and some rip currents came up and his son and him got swept up in it. He told the lifeguards to save his son, and then a big wave came and he hasn't resurfaced since. So they've been looking for him for the last day or two. Still no word or no new news. So just thoughts and prayers out to the friends and family of Shad Gaspard, one half of Crime Time. Really the only hook that kept me going through like 2003, early 2004. And then I was just like, okay, I got to give it up once they kind of had a less prominent role. But Crime Time and John Cena, man, that was some good stuff.
I wasn't around for the Crime Time era. I saw a little bit of it, and I was like, "This is kind of ridiculous." Like, then, the whole thing about them stealing Vince McMahon's wallet. I was like, "That's schism."
Homeboy Shopping Network, but just a wrestling gimmick.
Yeah,
Feel Me Live in Color. That's exactly what they were.
Right.
Yeah. And my man JTG, you know, he was the forever survivor. I mean, look at all the cuts he survived and stayed on the roster to like what, 2016, 2017?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
After that, Zack Ryder was the lone survivor. He finally got cut.
Yeah. So just if you want to just see some good skits, some good WWE production, just go back and watch some of those Crime Time skits on YouTube, full of hijinks. But yeah, again, just thoughts and prayers out to Shad Gaspard and his family and his friends.
Now, speaking of hijinks, there were plenty of those on this week's Raw. Would you like to hear about them?
You're going to tell us.
All right. So this week's Monday Night Raw was emanating live from the Performance Center. Charlie comes down for a boring 20-minute promo. She calls Edge and Randy Orton the greatest wrestling match ever. So someone actually took her to task on this on Instagram. They asked her why she called it the greatest wrestling match ever. And she had the best response. She said, because I want to.
I thought it was because they paid me to.
No, I just thought that was funny. But yeah, that's probably the actual reason, but we're not going to go into that. Randy Orton comes down. She asks him to explain his challenge. He says, WWE stands for Walk with Elias. I'm just kidding. It stands for World Wrestling Entertainment, he says. In their last match, Edge was the better man, but he knows Edge is not the superior wrestler. They're actually saying the W word now. He talks some more. Edge comes out. He knows Randy is playing a game of chess, so he couldn't just rush into his next move. This is just a backup plan for Orton. He didn't dream of being a WWE champion every night like he did. He didn't save his allowance to go to the show at the end of the month like he did. He didn't cry when he won the Intercontinental Championship like he did. Orton asks him if he's going to accept this challenge or not. Edge accepts, and then they both leave. What did you think of this promo here?
Now, it was good. He was really giving it to Randy Orton. Randy Orton was really giving it to him. I mean,
yeah, Randy just shut him down like, look, are you going to accept or not?
The promo part is never the problem with the Randy Orton match.
It's shitting people's bag.
It's the actual wrestling part with the Randy Orton match. That's hit or miss.
All right, Seth and Murphy are backstage. Seth is looking into the great beyond. He smiles at Murphy and says he's had a revelation. He's going to tell the world. After commercial, these two nuts are in the ring. I'm kind of upset that he didn't come down with a pulpit like the Jackal did on, on Retro Raw. He looked at Murphy's outfit. He looks like a Slim Jim rapper.
Now he's got stained glass on the side.
Oh, that's what that is. I was like, what are you doing, dude? He looks like the Shocker from The Amazing Spider-Man.
No, it's supposed to be like stained glass from like the church windows on the side.
I see. So Seth says that he has seen the light, and it's all thanks to Rey Mysterio. He talks some nonsense for a while. He addresses Rey. He says, soon enough, he will realize what happened to him was a blessing in disguise. He tells Rey that he is welcome. Is he channeling Damian Sandow here? You are welcome.
No, he says you can't see it now, which is fucked up.
I know. I'm being funny. Come on, Donald. Comedy. So it gets people going. Humberto Carrillo comes down with his broken English. He says Rey is an idol to millions, and all Seth is a coward. He gets in the ring. Seth tells him that Murphy is dressed, and if Humberto wants a match, Murphy is more than happy to oblige. Humberto Carrillo versus Murphy. A series of arm drags to start the match. Humberto is trying to do a flippy move from the outside onto Murphy. Seth walks over to Carrillo and just stares at him. Humberto hesitates, looks back at Seth. He jumps Murphy's... The heck? Oh, he jumps. Murphy blocks, turns it into Murphy's Law, and Murphy wins. Murphy tries to do more damage on Carrillo after the match. Aleister Black comes in for the save. Now, does that count as a distraction finish? Because he was distracted by Seth.
No.
Just hovering on the outside.
No. You have to actually have distraction in your notes for it to count as a distraction in the distraction finish drinking game.
That's how it works, okay.
Yes.
The Possum King is berating some stooge backstage. He wants his own private locker. He then berates the ref on the treatment of SmackDown superstars, particularly him, and how he plans to fix it. Liv Morgan is talking, does a promo on how her mom is her hero. She had determination, and she never quit, and neither will Liv. She's in tears. She says that she had a match against Charlotte Flair, a match she didn't win. Now she's determined, just like her mother, to become Raw Women's Champion. All right, Charlotte versus Ruby Riott. As Charlotte is beating the brakes off Ruby, she says hi to Liv and her mom on television. Ruby makes a comeback by stepping on Charlotte's fingers. Ruby gets her in a wrist lock and tries to bend her fingers. It's a pretty good strategy there. She keeps trying to work the hand. She tries a Riott kick, but Charlotte blocks it, gets her into a figure four, bridges into the figure eight, and Ruby taps. All right, so Charlotte interviews Bob. MVP interrupts and says he and Bob will not be doing business together because he is too focused on clowns like R-Truth and his wife. MVP dismisses Charlie and tries to draw Bob into his web. When is Lashley going to be Lashley? Street Profits and Viking Raiders actually throwing
guns. Blowing through everything. That was some good manipulation by MVP right there.
Yeah, he should be the Monday Night Messiah. See, so this X throwing crap, I didn't care about. If you like to comment on it, go right ahead.
It's vintage WWE from the 80s, man. Mr. Perfect type stuff. Just Viking Raiders showing their skills, the Street Profits being, you know, fish out of water, trying to adapt. Kind of the reverse of last week.
I see. Kairi Sane is in the ring with balloons everywhere. She says, we are here tonight to celebrate the new Raw Women's Champion, Asuka. Asuka comes down, gets her ceremonial bouquet. She thanks Kairi. Asuka describes the events that happened last week as best she can. Kairi runs down Asuka's accolades, along with visual aids on the screen. She says that Asuka is now a Grand Slam champion. Kairi plays a little tune for Asuka on her flute. I thought that was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Nia Jax crashes the party. Although a little creepcast moment here, I bet you'd agree.
Oh yeah, Nia was looking extra good.
Yeah, she says Asuka has nothing to celebrate because she was handed the title, and that she just looked her way into the greatest temp job ever. And best believe when Nia becomes Raw Women's Champion, they are going to have a real party. Asuka is hurt enough. She attacks Nia Jax. She hip attacks Nia out of the ring. Let's see.
Rough landing for
yeah. Well, you know, she can't help it. So she gets tossed, basically. So Charlie again, she's with the Possum King. She asks him about his match tonight against Drew. And Drew looks on her monitor. He says he is going to beat him tonight, and the next time they get into a ring, he will take his WWE championship. So R-Truth is in the ring. He's talking nonsense again, especially with his Philbilly teeth, Pretty Ricky thing he has going on. He talks about Bob. He calls the fool Nelson from The Simpsons. And I've almost had it with this thing. I'm almost at my peak. I can't take some more of this. He talks about his high school hero. He talks about his childhood hero, John Cena, and second Tom Brady. And again, they have to remind us he's talking about Rob Gronkowski. Of course, but you have to mention it. You could just leave it at, because Tom Brady's pretty funny. He's like, oh, I'm going to get Tom Brady. I'm going to get my belt back. They don't have to remind us that he's not really talking about him because we're not stupid.
Tom Brady's going to do something. He's going to be a part of this.
Tom Brady's actually going to interfere.
Mm-hmm.
Bob comes out, so I guess they're going to have a match. R-Truth versus Bobby Lashley. Truth leaves and comes back as Pretty Ricky. Bob gives chase and Truth is back. Bob catches Truth and launches him into the barricade, hoists him on his shoulder and rams him in the ring post. He gets him back up in the ring, slaps Truth and tells him to get up. Truth tries to get some offense in, but he locks in the master lock. I mean, the Fool Nelson. Hits him with the Fool Nelson slam and then another Fool Nelson and he taps out. And MVP is on stage cheering Bob on. But Lana is backstage and screaming and throwing shit around.
Tell it to America.
Like, do they not talk? Does this couple not talk to each other during the week or something? Like,
tell it to America. MVP helping the brother out. He's happy. Lana losing Bobby Lashley to the brothers. Freaking out.
No, I'm saying, like, why do these two not talk during the week at all? Like, what, have they not discussed this? Like, I'm like, honey, I'm going to be trying this new thing with MVP. It's not like he's just springing it on her. She's acting like they're just springing it on her out of nowhere.
Well, she probably thought that, you know, love conquers all. There's no way that she could, you know, she could counter MVP's manipulative right. ways with, you know, what she was on.
Yeah, and that really, really snazzy Black Panther suit, that like a 5X that he wears. Okay, so Asuka and Kairi are backstage still celebrating. Naya is creeping around the corner. She looks in Kairi's direction and gets a look on her face. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross are the DQ slam of the night, so congratulations to them. And the Iconics versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Both Nikki and Alexa railroad Ricky and Robert at the beginning. They come back and try to double team. Nikki dispatches Ricky Morton, while Alexa does her flying move and tries to get the pin on Robert Gibson. But then Ricky comes back in and continues to ram Alexa into the ring post. The referee disqualifies him. Now, does this qualify as kicking too much ass?
Yes, that would qualify as kicking too much ass.
Yeah, so they got disqualified for kicking too much ass.
And I really admire you giving the Iconics their due, referring to them as the Rock and Roll Express.
Well, it's really a shot at Billy.
Don't be shooting on Billy.
Come on now, she's the Robert Gibson of the group. Come on now.
Robert Gibson was a really good wrestler. He sacrificed a lot so Ricky Morton could be the star.
Uh huh. And she's in. Hopefully, one day she'll set. Billy will graciously step aside and let Peyton take her rightful place. And see, Kairi is playing her flute backstage. Naira creeps up from behind, rams her into a lighting crate, and walks away. Ricky and Robert are backstage. Robert slaps Ricky, who is stunned. They both apologize, and they hug. Medic attends to Kairi backstage. Asuka is furious.
Disappointing part of my evening. Seeing the Iconics out here having quarrels and stuff.
I'm pretty sure you more than willing to go with console them both.
They just came back. They shouldn't be having difficulties.
Maybe they need Dr. Shelby, the one who helped Kane and Kane O'Brien. So Medic attends to Kairi backstage. Asuka is furious.
Yeah,
that was
pretty foul. Kairi saying she was just playing her recorder. She wasn't messing with nobody.
She was trying to summon the Ocarina of Time from Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, now that was a good joke.
Come on now. All right, so Naya is backstage, just hanging around. Asuka gets in her face. Naya tries to walk away. Asuka grabs her by the braids and kicks her on the side of the head, leaving her laying. So twice now, she's beat her up. Like, you're not really showing me that Naya's a beast at this point. You're just showing me that she's good at getting her ass kicked.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, but then again, to be fair, both times it was kind of out of nowhere.
I don't know about that.
Like, both times that Asuka got a hold of her, it was literally out of nowhere, because the first time was when Naya was cutting a promo and she just attacked her. Second time, she's just hanging around and she just kicks her on the side of the head.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We'll see. Shayna Baszler versus Natalya, submission match. Pretty good match. I was actually impressed. Shayna tries to put Natty in the sharpshooter. Natty counters it with. You want to know what she countered with?
The Carafuda clutch.
No, the sharpshooter.
Oh, nice.
They wrestle some more. Shayna gets her in the octopus. Natty tries to fight it as long as she can, but she's eventually forced to tap. So Natty is just completely distraught, just hanging around the ring. The crew is setting up for the Kevin Owens show as Natty's still in the ring, frustrated. She's kicking at the carpet, destroying things, destroying the set. She pouts. Joey Samoa is calling her unprofessional, showing bad conduct. Now backstage, Zelina Vega is with the Los Ingobernables de Orlando. They're arguing again. She breaks it up and says they're going to go out tonight and be on the same page. Kevin Owens comes down and he sees the damage to his set. He grabs the mic and thanks Natty for getting rid of all the junk. He says he is back with the reduced set, but he and the Kevin Owens show have returned. He introduces his guest tonight. They all come down. Then he just stands on the apron as he gets in the ring. Zelina tells Kevin Owens that he only asked him on the show because he expects a Jerry Springer episode to bust out. People like him see them arguing and say that the team is in disarray and that her empire is crumbling. And I just want to know, why is Andrade dressed in like a suit from the 90s that you buy at Gadzooks?
He's watching The Last Dance. He's probably felt inspired by the clothes.
That blue guy. He's like, you know what? I remember that era of clothes. I liked it. I'm going to go buy some. Right. I wrote down actually blue garbage bag, but that works too. Zelina introduces her team. Andrade is a god among men. Angel Garza breaks faces and hearts. And Austin Theory is a blue chipper. Owens has a bad farmer tan. Would you call that a quarantine tan?
Yeah, more than likely.
Zelina asks him, why is he hanging out on the apron and not in the ring? He says that history has shown that anytime he's in the ring with more than one person, things tend to go off the rails. Also, they are not his only guests. Apollo Crews runs down and starts beating on Andrade. The two spill it on the floor. There's a big hubbub as we go to commercial. So it looks like he's back, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. So I guess during commercial, they make a match. So we get Apollo Crews and Kevin Owens versus Angel Garza and Andrade.
Remember, Andrade and Garza was supposed to be the team that Zelina Vega led into WrestleMania to challenge for the Raw Tag Team titles. Oh, Kevin Owens with a clothesline. Maybe it's a case of too much too soon for Austin Theory. I don't know. I mean, but there's something there. Kevin Owens stumbling around looking for his corner. Oh, and now Kevin Owens. Well, he found the chest of Andrade. Kevin Owens off the ropes and a kick right to the chest of Andrade.
And here comes Apollo Crews.
There goes Andrade. The tag is made. Andrade wanted no part of Apollo Crews.
And he got some anyways.
Crews goes right after Andrade. And then goes,
man, I've never seen Apollo Crews in this kind of state.
Apollo Crews with something to fight for.
And watch Vega.
Zelina Vega trying to get the officials attention. No. And a huge shot by Theory costing his team perhaps.
Whoops.
Apollo going to take advantage. And a toss powerbomb cover. And Apollo Crews gets the win for his team. And I think he wants a bit more.
The team of Apollo Crews and Kevin Owens.
I think there will come a day when Apollo Crews gets another opportunity at the United States title.
But again, the story here, theories, miscommunication with Garza cost his team in the end.
He moved out the way.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah,
it was just an accident.
Ooh.
Oh!
And Andrade attacking Theory from behind!
I'm out! I'm
I mean, obviously it was an accident by Theory, but Byron, at the same time, he had to feel that this was simmering since last week.
Yeah, all is not well in the camp of Zelina Vega and her trio. There is a serious issue with Austin Theory, and now we're seeing the climax of it.
For all you know, the camp's getting stronger. I mean, this is just a way of business negotiations. I mean,
negotiations? Now Garza has control of Theory.
They're beating the life out of
They're working on their severance package. That's what we call it.
This is a two-on-one beatdown.
What's the next event?
All right, now Theory. Theory trying to fight back, but to no avail.
And whatever plans Zelina Vega, Angel Garza, and Andrade have don't include Austin Theory.
You are useless, and I should have never believed in you.
An accident. This is an accident. Yup. This is an accident. This accident.
We transitioned from the camera zoomed in on a pain Austin Theory, then transitioned to a smiling Charlie. I laughed. It was like a weird, like a dissolve, like the camera.
Mm-hmm.
The camera effect. He's like in pain and just writhing in pain, and then she's just smiling. So Charlie interviews Drew. He is a fan of the Brand Invitational. He says it is an opportunity for dream matches. Yes, one of the dream matches that we were all thinking of was him versus Possum King. Drew calls him a dangerous individual, and if he thinks he's going to come to Raw, his own backyard, and win, then he's out of his mind. So more axe throwing. Did you any comments on the axe throwing?
Basically, it was just more of the same. More fun 80s type WWE stuff. Then the Street Profits started to get kind of the hang of it. And then the police came because somebody threw an axe through their window. And Dawkins was like, the police was like, who threw it? And Dawkins was like, oh, let me handle this, fam. And then he like tosses it over the shoulder, no look, bullseye, axe toss. And the Viking Raiders are all shocked.
I bet it was that picnic lady that called the cops.
Well, when an axe flies through their windshield, I guess they just come looking to see, you know, where's the biggest group of axe throwers at.
Right. The biggest group of axe throwers, because there's more. All right, so Aleister Black. Do they have that over there where you are? Because they have it here, and it's kind of like a weird activity.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like darts. People go get drunk and throw axes, yeah.
Yeah, that's really smart. Get drunk and be inebriated and throw sharp objects.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Yeah, so I guess you'd be getting drunk off those IPAs, huh?
You know it.
All right. So Aleister Black versus Murphy. Austin Theory is still hanging out at ringside. Seth is just staring at him. He offers him a hand and pulls him up. Meanwhile, in the ring, in the match we're supposed to watch, Black and Murphy continue. Seth points to the ring and Austin Theory attacks Black, leading to a disqualification. Black makes a comeback, but Murphy helps Theory. Murphy gives him some knee strikes and Theory hits the ATL. Seth embraces Austin and Austin returns the embrace. And let's see here. Seth gazes at Murphy as he holds Theory. And Murphy doesn't look too happy here.
Yeah, another...
Another disciple.
Another disciple, yeah, you know. Those disciples can get kind of jealous. You've read the book before.
Right. Yeah, they end up doing things, right. Yeah. More axe throwing nonsense. Anything happen here of note?
No. I think this is the very end where I was talking about the police rolling up.
Oh, you're talking about the whole segment. Okay, I was just going segment by segment. All right, so Charlie interviews Apollo Crews. He didn't know what hurt more, the injury or having to give up his spot and Money in the Bank. He had to look deep inside himself and stop feeling sorry for himself and take action. Next week, he is challenging Andrade for the title. As Zelina Vega interrupts, she calls Charlie Charles. She says Apollo has two choices next week. Number one, cut his losses and take care of his bad knee. Or number two, never walk again. Apollo simply says, Andrade better be ready. He asks where he is, and is he afraid that he'll slap his face off again? It's funny. Drew McIntyre versus the Possum King. Before the match can start, MVP comes out with Bob. MVP says the two of them have taken a certain interest in the match. Bob says he is putting Drew on notice that he is coming after him and the title, and if he needs to pry it out of his cold, dead hands, like Charlton Heston, that's what he'll do. Now, the match itself was a very big brawly style match. I mean, it's two huge men. There's not a lot you can do. Let's see here. Corbin takes a spinebuster badly. Drew tries for a claymore. Possum King counters into a tilt-a-whirl slam, which I forgot he calls the deep six.
Sidewalk slam. The spinning sidewalk slam. Mm-hmm.
It's a tilt-a-whirl slam. But anyway, Drew hits a Glasgow kiss and then a claymore and a 1-2-3 for the victory. Drew smack talks Bob as Bob just stares on him. And that is your Monday Night Raw. This one was just okay. It wasn't great.
Now they're setting up Bobby Lashley going for the title.
Good. He needs to. He should.
They set up Austin Theory getting kicked out of the group and then joining another heel group. He didn't even turn babyface.
Now they're sending Murphy up to get kicked out.
They set up Nia and Asuka. They made it official for Orton and Edge. So they did a lot of work to get us to Backlash.
Right.
That episode. Can't complain about that.
Let's see here. Okay, so are you ready to go back in time, Donald?
Oh, yes. Take me back to 1998.
All right, go put on your JNCO jeans and your Tommy shirt. Put on a little bit of that polo sport so the ladies can love you.
Definitely Levi's 5150s relaxed.
See, one of those weird kids. Okay. Everybody points to like stuff like JNCO is like a thing that we were all doing, but it was only like a handful of weird ass kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like we weren't all walking around like that. All right, so Raw is War, February 9th, 1998, Evansville, Indiana. The show starts with Sonny dressed as Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday to Classy Freddie Blassie, who is 80 years old. Stone Cold Steve Austin comes down to cut a boring 20-minute promo, which it's not, but I like to say that. He wants to make one thing clear to Shawn Michaels. You don't come out on national TV and rub a belt through Steve Austin's face. He wants a piece of his ass at the pay-per-view this Sunday. He calls Shawn Michaels out to the ring. DX appears on the Titantron laughing their asses off. He says he knows just how to pull his strings. He punked him out like a DOG dog. Austin doesn't call the shots around here. HBK does. He wants one good reason why he should come out. Austin says he does have one reason. He has his belt. And Shawn, not believing this, reaching into his bag, saying, no, no, he has his belt. He pulls out the plastic toy belt out of his bag. Now, how HBK can't tell that he's not carrying around the 15 pounds of gold and instead carrying around a plastic toy is beyond me, but whatever.
That's because the winged eagle belt isn't the big gold belt. It don't weigh 15 pounds.
We're going to weigh this thing at some point. Anyway, I mean, hey, he took the winged eagle, so I would be mad too. I'm like, no, that's the best belt ever. So Austin shows off the belt and says if HBK wants his belt back, he has to come out and ask real nice. So Raw tonight is brought to you by Foot Action. Do that even exist anymore? Does that company exist?
Foot Action? I don't think so.
Okay, yeah, I've not seen one of those in ages. But then again, I don't go to the mall anymore, so. So Sunny comes out in a different outfit from earlier. Let's see, Legion of Doom versus... Oh, yeah, she's there to ring announce. Legion of Doom versus Jeff Jarrett and Barry Windham. So the Rock and Roll Express earlier, not wrestling.
Barry Windham has finally gone back to the blonde hair. He got that black shit out of his head.
He's not a black jack anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so Jeff Jarrett comes down with his sauna, spa, minivan, mom, relaxation music. Barry Windham dyed his hair. JR talks about LOD, that their physical style may have caught up with them over the years, which is a nice way of saying the drugs have taken their toll.
That was only one person doing drugs.
It affected both of them, apparently. I don't know. The heels are getting the heat on Animal for a very long time. Animal makes a comeback and gets a tag. They dispatch a Windham and work on Jarrett, but Hawk catches a ring post. Cornette adds in a touch of Sidious Racket, and the Rock and Roll Express slam him into the ring steps. Jarrett locks in a figure four. But then Bradshaw comes in and goes after the NWA. They win by disqualification. So DX has a plan to regain their belt. They're backstage, and Triple H is like shooing the cameraman away. All right, Pierre versus Henry Godwin. The Quebecers come out carrying a slap bucket. Pierre does a tope suicida on Harry, on Henry, early shades of the stuntman character he played later on. Henry comes off the ropes. Jacques on the outside grabs his leg, and with the ref distracted, he hits him in the head with a slap bucket. Phineas chases Jacques. The ref is distracted by Jacques. Phineas hits Pierre with his own slap bucket. I see Henry rolls around for the cover. Henry gets the victory. China is milling around backstage. She confronts the Los Boricuas. She talks to them in broken Spanish. She needs help finding Steve Austin. She wants them to take care of him. They ask if she'll take care of them with a little cheddar cheese, like last time. She says, don't worry. The joke here is that China has never spoken a word on camera. The first time she does, it's in another language.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So like last week, see, I didn't get to do the show last week, but I was referring to this thing that so when they had Austin tied up in the ropes,
mm-hmm.
and Shawn was putting the belt in his face.
Right.
The clip that he does where he's just yelling at him and he goes, this is it, Austin, this is it. They played that over and over until WrestleMania.
Oh, well, yeah, that was the one besides Mike Tyson. That was
the soundbite of him going, this is it, Austin, this is it.
Yeah, that was the sound. That was the major sound, because they don't really get that physical after this.
Yeah, they keep them apart. That soundbite, it was just like, for some reason, they picked that one to continue to play. Because they would just repeat it like in the promos. But the Western Union Slam of the Week shows that soul steam. Brian Christopher and Pantera versus Taka and Aguila. So these two are teaming up after. Now, is Pantera the guy that Jerry Lawler slapped? Or is it somebody else?
I think that was S.A. Rios.
No, S.A. Rios is Aguila.
Oh, that's Aguila? Then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's when he was like 19, though, right?
Yeah, this is his first iteration. Later on, he becomes Papi Chulo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, man, S.A. Rios, it was like 3 years. He had a good little run until Lita left him for the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, that was the end of that. Yeah. No, remember how like one guy beat Brian Christopher and then Jerry Lawler said he would shake the winner's hand and then he shook the guy's hand and he slapped the crap out of him? I think that was Pantera.
Oh, okay, I don't remember that. I remember Brian Christopher at this time, though, coming in and the King denying him as his kid but always taking up for him.
All right, though, there's a funny spot at one of the pay-per-views where he goes, oh, yeah, I think it was during the light heavyweight tournament. And I don't remember if it was Ground Zero, but it was one of the In Your House shows. Jerry Lawler says, yeah, if he wins this, we'll have something to take back to all of our friends. All right, so these two are teaming up after what happened with the slap. It turned into a great WCW cruiserweight match. They're flying around the ring, looking really good. Brian Christopher hits a skull crushing finale or as he calls it, the hip hop drop. So, okay, so I used to, there was someone in the NWA who used to do the same move. Was it Bill Dundee or was it
Bobby Eaton, the Alabama Jam?
I was trying to figure out. I was like, who the heck was it? I know it wasn't Tully.
No, it was Bobby Eaton. Yeah, okay, the Alabama Jam.
Yeah, because I'm like, yeah, somebody in the NWA used to do it. I forgot who it was. But yeah, he calls it the hip-hop drop. Bernie Christopher has a Ford object. He tries to hit Taka with it, but he misses. Pantera borrows the object and puts it in his mask and headbutts Taka after a tag. Now, how did it also not take Pantera out? Didn't it have no effect on him either?
The person given the headbutt is never as effective as the person who receives the headbutt.
Yeah, but you have a foreign object in your head.
It's cushioning.
Okay. Okay, Donald. Paul Bearer and Kane come out to address Vader. They talk about what happened with Vader last week, the fire extinguisher and all that. Paul Bearer says he might have taken out his other eye. Good eye. Kane has a clock with Vader's face on it. He sets it on fire while Paul Bearer cries, it's time, Vader. And also, if you leeches of the night think that your Undertaker will show up in Houston, he won't because he is gone forever. Ken Shamrock and Chains versus The Rock and Farouk. Complete nothing match. A big fight starts on the outside. Shamrock hits a Hurricane Runner. The Rock comes in and belts Shamrock across the face with a chair. Did you see this?
Yeah, man. It's 1998. It's no protected chair shots here. Yeah, that was. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if it's at No Way Out or WrestleMania, but there was one where he just openly just boom across the face. I think it's at No Way Out.
This one was close enough.
It looks worse than this. Trust me. Like, you'll see it. You just brutal smack. Like, he pulls back and reaches back and just gives him everything.
I'm pretty sure Ken Shamrock was like, "Give it to me all the way."
Right. Yeah. He's a UFC guy. He can take your silly nonsense wrestling. Come on. So, Farouk gets the pin. Shamrock snaps after the match and belly-to-belly suplexes everyone.
Didn't want to see Ken Shamrock snap. That's what you didn't want.
Our WrestleMania press conference highlights. Did you see any of this?
Mm-hmm. I watched this whole thing today.
Okay, what happened here? Because I was just like, bleh, meh.
It was just a press conference, just detailing Mike Tyson's role as a special enforcer. Mike Tyson talking about, you know, growing up being a wrestling fan, liking Bruno Sammartino because he was always quiet but strong, but also liking the Valiant Brothers because they were flamboyant and, you know, over the top. And then it's just Stone Cold and you know, Shawn Michaels taking shots at, you know, Mike Tyson, talking about how, you know, they'll beat him up if he gets into their way and all that stuff. And then Michaels and Steve Austin have a pull apart with Mike Tyson in the middle for all the cameras to take pictures of.
So it was just picture day at the WWF, okay.
Yeah, you know, it's a normal, like, old school boxing type of press conference that, you know, back in the day, like you used to get.
Uh-huh. So China is wandering around backstage with Los Boricuas. She rips up poor Harvey Whippleman. Did you see this? She just picked him up and posted him against the wall there.
No, she literally lifted Harvey Whippleman like 2 feet off the ground.
Yeah. This is when his whole hatred of women started, I bet you. Because he went on like a Andy Kaufman like anti-women crusade for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that or not. It happened like a year later. No, wait. It happened like several years later because I know Jacqueline beat him. Because I know he was women's champion. And then he wrestled Jacqueline, and Jacqueline just mopped the floor with him. All right, so Shirosa Harvey Whippleman goes into the men's locker room and demands to know where Austin is. No one has seen him. Steve Blackman versus Recon. So during the match, the Jackal descends from the heavens on a pulpit. He is the real Monday Night Messiah. He talks about the smear campaign that WWF is on regarding him, calling him a psychopath. He talks about how disturbed his little sister was listening to Jim Ross talk about him and how he calls his followers Jekyllites. He engages in intellectual intercourse with the audience every week. Jim Ross reminds everyone that we do have a match going on, which is another BS nothing match. Black Mamet Recon tap out. And Ross doesn't know if he's a Jekyllite or a jackass. Jekyll hops into the ring and gets on the Recon. King suggests that they're about to have intellectual intercourse. That was funny. He calls Recon a disgrace to his mother, his father, his girlfriend. The two embrace, and then Jekyll slaps him. Recon steps to Jekyll, and Jekyll turns his back on him. I don't even know why. Let's see. So Ross says Recon wants to nail Jekyll. I guess they're going to have more intellectual intercourse. And Jekyll laughs it off, and the Truth Commission just heads to the back.
This was the original Monday Night Messiah right here. The inklings of it, right?
Definitely. See that pulpit? That thing must weigh a ton.
Yeah, you see how they had it suspended with chains coming down? 1998 technology.
Yeah, too bad it couldn't help someone else later.
Now, see, you didn't even have to go there. You know,
I'm legit not making a joke. I'm serious.
No, that's a very sensitive subject for this week. But yeah, Cyrus was great here. The virus, Cyrus.
Okay. So they already walked off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the New Age Outlaws come out and mock the dumpster incident. Anything you want to add there? Because I didn't really take notes on anything there.
Just that Road Dogg was wearing both the belts. That was funny.
Oh.
But yeah, they just reenacted the scene from last week.
Uh-huh. All right, so the Boricuas and China are backstage. The group splits up. They slam one of the other doors. Oh, one of the outer doors. I really hate Microsoft Word because it autocorrects words for no reason. I put outer doors and it says on your other doors. Steve Austin appears out of nowhere and padlocks the door, leaving them in the outer area. China comes over and tries to pull the door apart, but cannot. She is fuming. The artist formerly known as Goldust versus Thrasher. Marilyn comes down again. No, not Sunny as Marilyn, but Goldust, dressed as Marilyn Manson again. The crowd cheers for Sable, who is accompanying Mark Merrill, who is accompanying Marilyn and Dust. Merrill dismisses Sable from the ringside area. Now, the match, Thrasher is still horrible. He tries a springboard elbow, but that did not work out well for him. King is checking out Luna, saying, "Look at Luna, two moons." And Ross says, "Let's not." The crowd just chants for Sable during the match. Dustin is a pro, trying to get through the match, and Thrasher is not a pro. Sable comes back, gets in Luna's face. Goldust gets on the Sable. Sable slaps him. Thrasher rolls him up and pins him. Sable slaps Luna and heads back up to the ramp to a huge pop. So she's finally fighting back.
Yep, and this starts it all. WrestleMania 14, her versus Luna, one of the next to Stone Cold winning biggest pop of the night.
Is this where she powerbombs Mark Merrill?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which led to the led to the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. But,
I mean, you could see this building and building for the past, 3 months, though.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, one thing about this, speaking of Stone Cold and Sable Pop, did you watch it with the sound in the very beginning? When Austin comes out to do that 20-minute promo, you notice how his, it was one level of loud when the glass hit, but then as he started walking to the ring, it started getting louder and louder and louder until he got all the way in the ring, got on the ropes. I've never heard it a pop like that before.
No. Yeah, that was pretty standard. Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome pop I heard for. Oh, me personally was at WrestleMania 32. When he came out as a surprise, that was a really huge pop. That was actually pop of the night. So it just goes to show you how little they really care about these current dudes and how they really just still pop for the old heads.
Well, that's because they don't make the current dudes as cool as they made the old heads.
Right. Also, I was at Raw the night after Mania 17 when he was a heel, and they still cheered for him.
Of course, nobody wanted to see Stone Cold do that. He knows that was the biggest mistake, besides not showing up to wrestle Brock that night in his career.
Right. So I was going to add here that I can't wait for Scarlet Bordeaux to powerbomb Karrion Kross. All right, so DX is backstage. They're on their way to the ring. After commercial, DX is in the ring. Sean grabs the mic and talks about the 10-man tag at the pay-per-view. He says he is not waiting until Sunday to get his property back. HBK waits for absolutely nobody. Austin wanted to come down and to take his belt back. Well, HBK is right here. He calls Austin out, and Austin does not come. He asks again, adding, please. Austin comes down with the belt. He swings it at DX. DX hits the deck. The New Age Outlaws come out. Austin is surrounded. Suddenly, a chainsaw starts revving. No one can tell where it's coming from. Austin drops the belt, and China swipes it. Suddenly, the ring opens up, and Cactus Jack crawls out of it. And so does Chainsaw Charlie. Owen Hart arrives. The fight is on. DX and the Outlaws retreat. HBK stands on the stage holding up the WWF title. Ross is screaming at the top of his lungs. This is how you end the go-home show. This is how you do it. You just have everybody come out and have a little brawl. And then you just end it with a little tease.
I mean, really, Chainsaw Charlie, Jack, and Owen Hart ain't do shit. They just got in the ring. They didn't really punch anybody.
Yeah. But this is how they, like, I don't know if you remember how they used to end, but they used to end with, like, big, like, everybody against everybody. Like, if you have a match against this guy, it will basically be like a giant battle royal at the end of the show. That's how they used to end. Like the go-home shows.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're kind of missing now, but whatever. So, that's that. This one wasn't that bad. It wasn't as bad as, I really hated last week's.
Oh, no. Last week's was a seminal moment, like I said. That was the one that really got me into, like, oh, you know what? Need to be really checking out WWE, because the Mike Tyson thing was like, oh, peeked my head up. And then they followed that with the Chainsaw Charlie throwing him off the stage. I was like, oh, shit. That
you know what? Chain over here. I thought so, too, back then. But I watched it now, and I was just like, what about your horse shit? Because they came out later that night. They're fine.
They were all, they came from the hospital, all bandaged up. Yeah.
They're fine. I mean, they were talking about, they were like on life and death. Like, they wasted all that time with the whole waiting around thing. It took like 30 minutes. And then, like, you really thinking that something's happened to them. No, they just come back. All of that was bullshit. They were not really hurt. They're fine. And that's when I was like, if I had the same mindset back then, if I was an adult back then, I really would have just like lost my top at it.
No, probably not, because the deal was you get caught up in it. The whole point is to get caught up in it. When you look at it now from an extended view frame from it, you don't get caught up in it. But when you're watching it live as it's happening, you're getting the same thing when Braun and Bobby Lashley went through the LED board. You know what I'm saying? You watch that 6 months later, you're like, oh, I see everything. But when you watched it that night, for a few minutes, it was like, oh, shit. They went through the LED board. Is he okay? Is he burnt up? Is he all right? Are they going to be able to survive?
I completely even forgot about that. The LED board thing, wow.
Yeah.
No, I was just like, so all that was for nothing, because they come out and they're just acting stupid again. And like, they showed the replay like from the overhead, and they were like in like packing peanuts, and it was just so funny to look at. And on top of that, they didn't even hit the floor. They hit tables.
I mean, they took some precautions, because I mean, you do have to work it. You can't have just, you know, two bodies flying around.
Okay, but then don't show those other angles. Just show us that one angle and be like, holy shit. And I really would have thought like, holy crap, they're it's kind of like at WrestleMania 17, where like Undertaker chokeslams Triple H to the floor off that staging area, and then you're like, holy crap! And then they show the replay that he's landed safely on some beautiful crash mats.
Well, you know, like Kevin, we've never Kevin Dunn's never won a Grammy for a reason, sir. Not a Grammy, but I mean an Emmy.
You don't show that. Come on.
Yeah, there's a reason why WWE's never won an Emmy, right?
Right. But no, yeah, it was more of that. I was just like so annoyed. And then Michael Cole with his like BS like updates. He's like, oh yeah, I'm here and they're working on it. I'm like, wait, it took you that long just to tell us that?
Drama.
I don't know. I was really annoyed at that show last week.
No, I loved it.
Everything else was just like, I think the only thing I liked was the Austin and HBK, Austin and HBK moments.
That was when the New Age Outlaws officially became a part of DX because they was all feeling down and Jim Ross was about to scold them. And then Shawn Michaels ran in there and was like, nah, that was perfect. That's exactly what you got to do.
I mean, it wasn't official. It was just them giving him encouragement. It didn't officially happen until after Mania.
But it was basically, they became like, you know, loosely affiliated because they got the tag match. They were the...
No, that started in like late, like the whole thing with LOD. That was, they did that with DX. Like they'd already been kind of loosely involved
mm-hmm.
for a while though. But no, that was pretty cool. And then, it was just, the whole thing was just hilarious, but no, I just did not like that in hindsight, watching it as an adult. Of course, 17-year-old me just loved it.
Of course. Because again, you were caught up in the moment. You were living it live. You were, you weren't thinking critically. You were thinking what they present me is what they present me.
Right. Although I do still like the King of the Ring Hell in a Cell match. I do still like that.
That's interesting.
Well, your mind's kind of changed on it for over the years.
That's never really, it's never been my favorite Hell in a Cell match, even from the first time I saw it. I mean, it's a hell of a spectacle, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't even a match. It's just a dude falling off of shit.
No, look at you now.
The first one is still the best one to me. It will always be.
Oh no, as a match, as a wrestling match, yeah, that's the best one.
Yeah.
But then like there are people who will go down in flames and tell you straight up that that's the greatest match of all time. The Mankind and Undertaker one.
That might have been the first wrestling match they ever paid attention to. But yeah, it's not the greatest. Definitely not the greatest Hell in a Cell of all time.
But I still like it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've watched it as an adult, and it still holds up to me. I still really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, because the man is literally falling fucking 40 feet. It's just nothing to, you know, it's nothing to look back on and be like, oh, that took me out of it. It's like nothing to look back on.
I'd be like, no, bullshit.
Right.
They don't have to fall.
Now, what may get you out of it is knowing what you know about concussions and them actually letting him go climb up that ladder, climb up the cage again when he should have definitely got his ass wheeled up out of there.
No, the one that gets me now is the Royal Rumble match with The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one that I can't. Yeah. I cannot. Like, if I look at that again, I'll just be like, oh, whoa. His major cringe. That did not age well at all. This is like, if you look at it from now, like what we know about concussions and stuff now, he took 11, I counted them, 11 shots to the head.
With his hands handcuffed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and The Rock was swinging that shit too. That's actually one of the best matches ever, though, because The Rock gets to work the mic, and it's right around, it's just, what's that, the Royal Rumble, right?
So, it's the Royal Rumble.
So it's just after Christmas, and he grabs the
ring bell, starts singing right.
And he hits him with the ring bell, and he goes, ring, and then he gets on the mic and goes, bells will be ringing.
Yeah, he was on the mic the whole time. No, but just like, yeah, but what we know now about concussions and stuff, yeah, that's probably one of the darkest matches in WWE.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You look back on it. But at the time, it was like, oh, shit.
At the time, I was like, This is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Mankind is a G. He is a G.
Now, do you think the whole... No, yeah, they played it into the storyline. The whole thing about, like, him not actually saying, I quit.
Mm-hmm. It was a tape.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do like Mankind's promo. He's like, I will not say those words, you twit. I will not say I quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a really good build. All of the Rock's matches in that 98-99, after his Intercontinental run, all the way up to him becoming the corporate Rock, all of his matches had really good builds and really good memorable promos and video packages.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah. It's going to be fun watching all these matches again. But let's see. Should we do a little something for Tuesday for No Way Out? No Way Out Texas, maybe a little live tweet.
Yeah, so you set the time and the date, and we'll make sure everybody's there.
All right, so just keep looking on the WrestleCast feed, and we'll let you know. Maybe more likely Sunday.
Okay, depends. Sunday. All right.
We'll just do it old school, like, you know. Oh, yeah. It was actually, what, 8 p.m. for you? The pay-per-views and stuff?
Yep.
Yeah. For me, it was always 7.
So Sunday.
Yeah, in between there. So just, right. Yeah, just whatever. Pick a time between them.
Okay. We'll do a Sunday at 8 p.m. since The Last Dance isn't going to be on this week.
I still have not watched the last one. Well, I started watching the last one, but then I started doing other things. And then, like, by the time I came back, it was already halfway done. So I just started it. I just restarted it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Sunday at 8. That works. We'll get
everybody. Oh, yeah. We got a shout out of this Rodman working in WCW.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They did include that in the documentary. He came, missed practice, and showed up on Nitro.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool. Hanging out with Hogan and Eric Bischoff and the Renegade.
Yeah, or as a, and also DDP, or as a, I think it was, I forgot which one it was. I don't know if it's Dan Patrick or Scott, whatever. Anyway, one of those guys was calling him some guy.
Yeah, that was Dan Patrick.
Dang it. All right. So I guess if we have nothing else, you got anything else to add?
Yeah, just please remember to support the WrestleCast. Check out our AEW reviews over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/CSPN Media. I got to give a shout out to Miss Dee Jonay, Miss Simi, Greg, Samuel Kalunga as well. Everybody who listens to the WrestleCast and live tweets with us each and every week. Also Classic Materia as well. And stay tuned for the parting promo.
All right. Hopefully at the pay-per-view. Oh, crap, it's the pay-per-view this week. This weekend on Sunday, isn't it?
No.
AEW?
It's Saturday.
Oh, it's Saturday. Okay, I was going to say, like, yeah. Hopefully Cody drives a little more than 5 feet.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. You got shout-outs and thank yous?
Oh, we're not done. I thought we were done. No, I got nothing. Shout out to all the people out there in the place to be.
All right. We'll catch you guys next week.
Now, when I lost to Drew McIntyre at Money in the Bank, part of me believed that I had lost everything. I fell into a dark place, a place so dark I wasn't sure if I would ever escape. But without darkness, there can be no light. And I have seen the light, and I have seen it brighter than I have ever seen it before. And that is all thanks to one man. That is thanks to Rey Mysterio. Now, what happened to Rey Mysterio has been described by some as heinous and disgusting and unforgivable. And it has been described by others as an act of penance paid to me for Rey Mysterio's disbelief in the Monday Night Messiah, but I don't see it that way at all. The way I see it, what happened to Rey Mysterio was unfortunate, but necessary. A sacrifice for the greater good. It was the cathartic moment I needed for the clarity that I needed to be the leader that I was meant to be. Now I want to take this moment to speak to Rey Mysterio directly. Rey, I know you're at home with your family right now, and you're healing. And I know that you can't see it right now, but soon enough you will come to understand that what happened to you was a blessing in disguise. And so I want to say this to you now, from the bottom of my heart, so that when we meet face to face again, it doesn't have to be said. Rey Mysterio, you're welcome.